Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast in association with Britpart. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I am Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about all things Land Rover and everything to do with owning them. Exciting news at the moment then, Steve. Defender Octa has just surfaced.
Yes, but I will say one thing.
Go on.
£158,000.
It is not cheap, is it? But, I mean, it's not just a fancy limited edition with some sparkly paint and a new interior, is it? This is like completely re-engineered.
I like it.
It is really, really cool. I think they could have been a little bit more imaginative with the colours. You've got a choice of two colours, and one's like a coppery grey and one's a greeny grey. They could be a little bit more impactful if you ask.
Yeah, I wonder which... Because I noticed that there was going to be 1,070 of them made, and I wonder whether it's a case of... Be interesting to see who has the grey ones and who goes for the greeny grey ones.
Yeah, I mean, actually, they're not hugely different. Maybe it's one of those things where you have to see it in person to really get the full experience of the colour. But it's, yeah, they don't... I just think they should be a little bit more... Maybe they're trying to be understated, which is fair enough. And maybe, actually, a brighter colour on the body style might look a little bit over the top. I don't know.
I suppose the kind of customers that buy them will possibly want to be a little bit understated. Because if you think about, you know, a G-Wagon.
Yeah.
They tend to be dark colours, don't they? They don't tend to be leery.
Yeah, that's true.
Some of the big, you know, is it C63 type? The 6.3 V8 G-Wagon, they tend to be understated.
Yeah, I suppose. I've actually got the colours here. Special colours. Petra Copper, that's the one I mentioned. Faro Green, Carpathian Grey, which of course they already have on the Carpathian edition, and Charente Grey, they're all matte.
So I quite like that.
I think, that, yeah. It's
almost like a military-esque kind of, yeah.
It does give them a very different look, which is quite cool. The wheels, there's been a few comments on the wheels. The wheels look really smart. They're almost like a rally-type, real off-road-looking wheel. Which you can get the 20-inch, those ones, with all terrains.
Okay.
And then if you want, you can spec your Octa with bigger alloys, with more road-focused tyres, which are, I guess, probably what most people will go for. I don't know.
Would you?
Well, for use in the UK, I suppose it depends. Well, I wouldn't. I'd go for the off-road wheels.
Me too.
But I suppose, I don't know.
It's interesting, isn't it? When you see a new launch, you immediately know which spec you would go.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you remember when, obviously, the new Defender came out and they had you could spec one up, couldn't you? And you just checked the options. I mean, I got up to 88,000 without even trying.
It's not hard to do, is it?
No, just kind of the things I would choose.
Yeah, so the if you want the road-biased rubber, 22-inch alloys with all-season tyres. But yeah, the choice is yours, really. I think if you were to go for one, in my mind, you would go for the most off-roady spec you can go for with the 20s and the all terrains.
I read that
Look at it. Sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say. So it's been said by the managing director Mark Cameron. He's the managing director of the Defender and Discovery.
Right.
That at least 50% of Defender owners take their cars off road at least once a month. Though
really?
I think that's surprising.
That is surprising.
I mean, what do they define as off road? Or my take on that is, because I don't think it's anywhere near 50%. They say it is. They've done the research. What do they define as off road?
Yeah. The other question, of course, is how of the people I asked, who is actually going to say, "Oh no, I only ever drive it on the road." Even if you don't take it off-road, you're probably going to say that you do, aren't you?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think 50% of the people, or certainly another 40% of the people, are just saying, I think they want to imagine that they do it.
Yeah, sure.
You know, if they went to Burley horse trials and they drove into the car park, the public car park, technically that is off-road.
Yeah, of course.
Do they define that as off-road? Because I see a lot of new Defenders around and not one of them. You see a few work ones now, the ones that are actually towing Big Eye Williams trailers, and they're obviously going to site.
You see quite a few sign-written ones as well.
Yes, various you companies. Do. But but most of the
they're sort of,
you know, the school run.
But I mean, if you were going to buy a Defender, if you did go off road and you were going to buy a Defender and you had the money, this is the one to go for, because not only is it got, you know, the real chunky looking off road tires and wheels, it's also been revised far more than first meets the eye. It's funny, when we came back from Billing last week, we'd spoke about the Arctic Trucks 1835, didn't we?
Yeah.
And I couldn't help but sort of not draw a comparison, but they've gone off and done their own development on that. This thing is like, wow, when you actually read about what they've done and what the specs and the changes. The bumpers, for instance, have been completely changed front and rear for better approach and departure angle. Would you go, you know, spend the extra cash and go for the Octa if you weren't going to make use of that, do you think?
I think if I had the money, yeah.
Yeah, it would get my money.
I mean, I read, actually, so a lot of people will say, oh, the new Defender. You can either be in the new Defender camp or the old Defender camp. We're obviously in both.
Yeah, sure.
We respect the fact that things have to evolve. Wading depth, okay? So the Octa, they've actually increased it from the Defender from 900 mils to 1 meter.
1 meter.
Which is double now that of an original Defender.
Yeah,
it's 500 mil.
Yeah.
So people say they don't build them like they used to.
No.
Well, they're building them better, technically.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, whichever way you look at it, if you get a meter, a tape measure or a rule out, and you measure a meter, you go, how on earth can any production car go through water that deep?
With all the flooding that we get around here, basically what we're saying is we need an Octa.
That extra wading depth is probably helped to be made up by the fact that it's nearly 3 centimeters taller than a standard 110. Out of the box, you can only get the 110 as well. You can't have an Octa in a 90 or a 130 at the moment. I don't know whether they'll change that. But not only is it it's a little bit taller, but the suspension arms are longer. Everything is
they've been beefed up, haven't they?
Yeah. So it's got a wider track width as well, and better articulation. So your standard 110 or RTI angle. 430 mil, which is still pretty good for an independently sprung vehicle. Octa is now 569, and that's, you know, you see them on videos and things like that, and they're lifting wheels all over the place off-road. A, the extra articulation will, of course, help with that, but B, the reason they can afford to not be quite as flexible as a more traditional or, you know, any sort of B-Maxle car, regardless who it's made by, is because the traction control and the technology now is so good that you don't really need that much suspension travel.
Of course, it just carries on. Yeah. It's an interesting proposition. I noticed that, we started this podcast and I said £158,000.
Yeah.
You can get them from, they start at
£145,300.
I'll have two then. Yeah, but you see, this is my thinking, right? So, if you can afford £145,300 on a car,
yeah,
you just wouldn't. You would just buy the top of the range, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And I think for future values, I think these are certainly going to.
Well, this is it. I really hope that people who buy these actually use them, because so many sort of limited editions, especially things like the, I know they're a lot more limited, but things like the Trophy Defenders, Defender Trophy 1 and 2.
Of course.
And the Works V8s, to a certain extent, they get bought, they get put in a heated garage and you never see them again.
Which I think, I don't know. I think they've built a car to be used. Why 1,070 examples? What's the number there? Do you know?
That must have some significance. I mean, I've been trying to take in all the specs and, you know, get under the skin of it a bit, and I can't say I've come across that reason for that particular number, but it no doubt has some sort of relevance. The big numbers that caught me are not only the track width is wider, which means it's got flared wheel arches and, you know, it looks really stocky. It will be interesting to see how well it does with width restrictions, because the standard new Defender
is a wide car.
But the engine, 626 brake horsepower.
Because basically the predecessor to that power was 108 horsepower down.
The Carpathian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, completely.
So, because that clearly wasn't enough.
Well, yes. You might want to. Well, yeah, the numbers this thing will do. 3.8 seconds to 60 at 155 mile an hour from a Defender. Can you imagine if you said that to someone back in like 2014-15 when they were just about to like sweep the last Defenders out the door and they were, you know, in less than 10 years' time, the next Defender will do 0-60 in less than 4 seconds.
Oh, and weighed at 1 metre.
And weighed for, yeah, it's just...
No, these are kind of headline figures, aren't they?
I don't know. And the other big change, of course, you mentioned the Carpathian. That was obviously a supercharged V8 JLR engine. This is now BMW power, turbo V8. And it's quite obvious, really, that they're going after the real high-end luxury, like you said, G-Wagons, probably things like... what is it? The Bentley Bentayga, Lamborghini. What's the Lamborghini?
Oh, yeah, I know.
Do you know the I don't know, I can't remember what it's called.
I've been in one of those Bentaygas, you know.
Have you?
Yeah.
What's it like? I bet it can't wade a metre deep, can it?
Well, it was a surreal, I think they're W12 engines, aren't they?
Oh, I've got nothing.
Triple glazed.
Really?
When Land Rover Monthly was owned by Dennis Publishing and they had Evo magazine, they used to get all of the cars in.
Right.
And in fact, the driver of said Bentayga was markets expert Tom Barnard. So he took us down the road in it and he's absolutely chucking it down. And it was the most surreal, floaty feeling. But what an ugly car, in my opinion.
It's one of
It's not great.
They say money can't buy taste. The Lamborghini's not for me. None of them. Have you seen the Rolls Royce? Anyway, we digress. This thing is like proper lotto win. Probably one of the first things I'd do is buy one of these.
Me too.
They're like,
and I would use it.
I have to say, I was sceptical on the run-up with all the camo cars and like the teasers and things like that. I just thought, is this just going to be another kind of limp-wristed limited edition? No, it isn't. They've put serious work into this and it is very cool.
What I find quite bizarre, so... Jaguar, as we know, they're stopping the F-Type. They extended the F-Type Jaguar for another year.
Right.
So their run-out models are probably the ones to have.
They're going all electric, aren't they?
They're going all electric, which I think is a crying shame. But the fact that a 626-horsepower V8 petrol car can still be invested in 2024 and launched and no doubt purchased, I think all of those 1,070 will be bought.
I think so.
Very quickly.
I agree with you.
We are in the latter stages of being able to buy cars like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think these are the ones where people will hold on to them.
I hope so. I think there'll be an element of that usual thing when a really limited number car comes on the market where people will buy them. And then they'll put them straight back up for sale for more money than they paid because the waiting list will be. If you know, as many people as we hope go for this, I think demand will be strong when those 1,070 models are all sold.
So if any of our listeners are looking to purchase one or is interested, we've heard that the order book actually opens on the 31st of July 2024. So if you're listening to this in the future... You've missed out.
You might have missed out.
You might have missed out. I should imagine you have missed out. But, and I reckon delivery for cars later in the year.
How exciting. I'm buzzing to see one in person. I really, really can't.
Do you think we can get one on a long-term test?
No, probably not.
For the magazine?
Even if we did, could you imagine trying to fuel it?
Yeah, I don't think our mileage expenses will stretch to that.
I don't think so. But, yeah, I'm really, really excited about this. And, probably the first... Other than the first edition when the new Defender first came out, probably the first really, really like big passion project that JLR have launched on the new Defender platform. So I'm buzzing to see one.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. But it got us thinking, didn't it, about all of the other special editions that Land Rover have done over the years. And we were talking, weren't we, earlier on as to which ones...
Well, Land Rover always been partial to a special edition, haven't they? All the way through various models and decades. Yeah. And, you know, they're still... The Burford Edition Range Rover was out recently. That's quite cool. The latest shape Range Rover, Burford Edition. Look that up. Again, not a car that you're going to buy, you know, if you haven't got serious money sat in the bank, but a very, very lovely thing to look at. And I'm sure it's probably similar to or better than the other real high-end SUVs in the range. But taking a step back, looking at some of the older stuff that you can perhaps afford.
Yeah, yeah. So
something a bit special.
Let's have a look.
You've got the first thing that springs to mind, and actually the only limited edition from Land Rover's past that spanned all the models that were on sale at the time is the 50th anniversary, because you could buy a 50th anniversary Discovery one, Freelander one, P38, which was the current Range Rover, and Defender. I don't think there's been a special edition before or since that spans every model at one time.
Wonder why they haven't done that.
I don't know, really. I guess it's maybe to do with the sort of angle, the sort of feel. Like with G4 edition, for instance, you could get G4 edition Freelander, you could get G4 yes. edition Disco 2 and Defender, but they wouldn't have done a G4 edition Range Rover, which is weird because they did actually use Range Rovers on the G4. So that was maybe... potential one they could have
did
done,
they
but
not
didn't
do a G4 Range Rover.
No, they did a G4 Range Rover that was used on the competitions.
Yeah, the LFE22,
the actual G4 Range.
Yeah, I see, but they didn't do the special
edition. G4 edition.
Sorry,
from the dealer. Do you see what I mean?
I get where you're going. But we all know what the best special edition is.
Do we?
Well, I do.
Go on. I'm listening.
The North American Spec 90.
Well, yeah, that's a
in AA yellow, nonetheless.
It is hard. That was, I won't give too much away, but I had a very, very good look around a 50th anniversary Defender very recently. And the similarities, the crossover between that and the NAS 90 are huge. There's like, they must have been pretty much developed side by side. And yeah, the NAS one, I mean, I always said, I think I've said to you before, when we had our like, dream Land Rover type things, if I were to build a Defender from the ground up, I would definitely go down that route. V8 galvanized chassis, probably manual, because you could get automatic or manual.
Okay,
5-speed R380 behind a V8 in a brightly coloured soft top. Oh, imagined.
I think that for me is the ultimate look, but I also like the well, we had the UK version technically, didn't we? The SV90.
Oh, the 200 TDI.
Yeah, the 200 TDI. We didn't get the V8 in that, did we? We ended up with the 200 TDI for the UK market.
Yes, that was soft top as well, wasn't it?
It was. And so I know Jim Marsden at Google Pin has one, but he's put his on a galvanised chassis because he used to race that car, then realised actually these are quite rare and worth restoring. So he basically stripped it from a race car and rebuilt it.
Yes.
That's the SV. That car is lovely.
They have the...
That's probably one of my favourite UK cars.
They're rare as, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Hardly
any. They've got the 5-spoke wheels off the LSE, I think it was, the Range Rover Classic LSE.
That's right. Yeah.
Like the flats, 5, they look really, really smart. And they're a sort of... I can't remember if they're exactly the same colour or a similar colour to the 50th anniversary, aren't they?
Slightly more. I think they're
a greeny.
It's a greeny colour. And the 50th is a more...
Yeah, it's like... Atlantis blue, like Atlantis, turquoise blue. No, they're really, really cool. And I was at the Gaydon Land Rover show earlier in the year, and there was a great... I actually said about it in the magazine. There was such an amazing turnout of... There was more special editions there than I ever remember there being before, and a lot of them were P38s. There's some really nice P38 special editions.
Braemars.
There's the Braemar, the obviously you have Holland and Holland.
Oh, yeah.
They're very, very smart.
They are very smart.
They're serious money now. With the you could get the optional gun drawer in the boot and the little holders for all your crystal glasses.
So British.
So British, yeah, definitely.
You cannot possibly own that car without a black Labrador.
Yeah, black Lab and a couple of shooters.
Yeah.
But no, the Holland and Holland always turns heads, that gorgeous green colour. The Linley was the rarest P38.
So I've not seen one of those.
There's one in the Dunsfold Museum. It's completely like black, completely black.
Okay.
I believe black leather as well, but very, very upmarket, very cool looking, hardly any made. But if you want to get into a limited edition, and a lot of people do because it's just something a little bit special, Range Rover wise, the Bordeaux. Do you remember the Bordeaux?
Yes, yeah.
So like a burgundy colour with the burgundy carpets and piping on the seats. That's a quite a nice car.
They had the sort of a cream leather, didn't they? That's piping, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen those.
I really like those, and they're still quite sensible. Disco 2 Adventurer Edition. Do you remember that? That was like a...
Ah.
I think you could get that in a couple of different colours, but they had like the graphite centres in the wheels, like special alloy wheels and a few other bits and pieces. Again, you wouldn't maybe look twice at one in the street. If you knew, you know, it's one of them, if you know type thing. They're quite nice. And even like the run-out models, like the Landmark and the Pursuit, really high spec. Oh, Metropolis. Do you remember the Metropolis? Disco 2.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And they did that in a Freelander 2 as well.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
That's a nice one.
Yeah.
That's really, really nice.
I completely forgot they did it in Freelander 2.
Mm.
They were sort of like your urban type thing, weren't they? With the like bit of chrome here and there.
Do they like diamond cut wheels or something? It looks...
That's it.
Yeah.
Yes. Really,
really nice.
So if you look around, a lot of them really don't... They don't sell for tons more than a standard one. Because people aren't really aware of what they are. But as you know, as they...
As time goes on, and there's fewer and fewer of them...
They come into their own.
They do. You see, for me, if I was to buy a late Defender, so 2015 run-out model...
Yes, yeah, there were three, wasn't there, Stu?
Yeah, the Autobiography, the Adventure, and the Heritage. I really like the Adventure in orange and black.
Yes.
But you see those on the road now, they look awesome.
They were,
and the values have calmed down, because obviously, as we know, the Defender market has declined a little bit and settled a bit more. They're not unsensible. They're not unsensible money.
Okay. I can't say I've really looked at them, but I know I was on a photo shoot a few months ago at Hayward Revive on the Norfolk coast, and there was a customer of his has an orange one, like you just said about, orange 110. And it was his daily drive. So, like, it was really kind of, not tatty, but a well-used Defender. And it was so good to see someone. He was, like, obviously spent the money when they were new and just used it as a Defender should be used.
We see, he would have paid the going rates, the rate they were when they were selling. But, obviously, he would have seen his vehicle worth more money.
Yeah.
Because they appreciated very quickly, didn't they? So,
yeah.
So technically, he's probably experienced depreciation-proof motoring, even if it's scruffy.
Probably. And look, I'm not being funny. We all know what Defenders are like and the effort people put into them. You could quite easily make that look like brand new again for, you know, with time and effort and money, of course. I don't know which of the three I would have. I really quite like the Heritage. There's a lot of people that do Heritage-style Defenders, but when you actually see the proper...
Yeah, the actual real thing, definitely. I think I might... Oh, this is a bit of a statement. I'm a bit bored of that colour.
Yeah, it has been a bit overdone.
Because lots of people have used it to chart up older, scruffy examples.
Yes. Funny story, actually. The Autobiography, which was, I think, the most expensive of the three. I think they're about 60 grand new. I worked on one of them when I was at the main dealer. I didn't PDI it. I can't remember what I did. I might have fitted something to it. They're really, really nice, but you can tell... I maybe shouldn't say, you can tell that obviously they are just a Defender underneath and they've been sort of luxurized, if you like.
You know,
like leather trimming around the door cards and things like that. It's all done very nicely, but when I had the door card off to do something, and it's like you can see behind it, they've had to make, shall we say, impromptu revisions to how things fit to like take into account the extra materials and things like that.
Well, that bodes a question then. Are you better not buying something that's a limited edition, but recreate your own using some of the people who advertise in Land of Monthly, some of the people who do the leather trim, and create your own?
Potentially.
Because you get a better car.
You'd certainly get exactly what you wanted.
Yeah.
Because there's...
So you go and see the guys at Ruskin... design, leather interiors, you can choose the exact leather, the exact stitching, how you want it.
Yeah.
And we've seen those interiors before. It's done to perfection. Are you better doing that?
It depends what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want...
It's the beauty of Land Rover ownership.
Absolutely. You can take, you know, something that's a little bit tired and really, really make a nice job of it. Or, of course, if you do want that provenance, to coin a phrase, you can go and buy a genuine one that was done at the factory. It's one of those, isn't it?
So is there any limited editions that are your least favourite?
Don't really know. They all have their sort of... I think, like I mentioned earlier, the problem I have with limited editions for the most part is they're not special enough. They're just like a standard model, but with a few bits. Do you know what I mean? And then they've put a badge on.
Like Tomb Raider. There's an example. When the Tomb Raider film came out in the... when was it?
Late 90s.
Late 90s.
2001.
Yeah, I think you're bang on with 2001.
I really like, but I think that's one that they did do enough to. Because you got the roof rack, you got this extra lights.
You got the Tomb Raider badging and things.
Yeah, see, I think they did go far enough with that one, but other things like, is it the LXV? And like the Defender Silver and Defender Black, they were exactly what they said on the box, which is a silver Defender with like, I think you got like a rollover hoop on the windscreen, and that was pretty much it. They weren't far enough from standard to be sort of warrant that special edition. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get you. Yeah.
And sorry if you own a Defender Silver or a Defender Black, they're still very nice, but they're just not special enough.
You wouldn't turn it down if it was offered to you, would you?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. But yeah, I mean, it's quite fun to see. Do you remember the G4, we touched on it briefly, but the G4 editions, things like the Defender and the Disco 2, where you could have four colours.
Yeah, I remember the yellow ones.
Borrego yellow. Mm. Actually, there's a guy who's recently finished fully restoring a Disco 2 Borrego yellow G4 edition, and I must give him a shout and see if he wants to get it in the mag, because it is like, eat your dinner off it clean. You could have Borrego yellow, you could have Tangier's orange, which of course was the main G4 colour.
Yeah.
And then you had silver or black. If you were going to buy a G4 edition, why would you choose silver or black?
Yeah,
it's just going to look like a normal car.
I have seen a black one. I remember now. Mm. I have seen one. But I know Richard Hammond, he used to have a yellow G4 110.
Oh, okay. They look really, really
good. It's not for sale for ages, ex-Richard Hammond.
Yeah, use that old.
So it's like at least £10,000 more than it should be.
One of my favourite things, actually, about the G4s, especially the... I'm not sure if they put it in the Freelander, but they certainly did in the Disco and the Defender, was the seat covering. It was like, I think it was called a Mogul seat covering. It's like textured, like bobbly vinyl on the outside, and then like a nice cloth in the middle. I don't know why it sticks in my head, but I just...
Not like your Alcantara?
No. It was like... it was mainly the outer fabric was like a... the outer covering was like a textured vinyl. It was like real hard wearing and looked really chunky and cool. I really like that about the
I know that. Well, do you know the reason I know you're talking about?
What's that?
I have in my 19 in G4 trim seats.
Oh really?
I liked the texture.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about. So the inner parts of the seats in my own Land Rover.
Yeah.
That's the G4 trim. That is that. I liked it because it was quite like hard wearing looking and utilitarian.
Yeah, they're really comfy, but they're really like, they look like something you would expect
to
see.
Yeah, of course. No, I've got that. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, that was a highlight for me from the G4 editions. But there's a, like I say, since the 50th was the only one that spanned all the ranges, you do find these little, do you remember like the old Freelander? They did a Kalahari and they did a Serengeti.
Yeah,
they were sort of like slightly up-specced standard cars. Funnily enough, I was sorting out my shed the other day and I found two new-in-packet Kalahari badges. No idea where they came from. But if you've got Freelander Kalahari and it's missing its badges, give me a shout and I'll send them to you. But
that's very kind of you.
Well, it's not like I've got any use for them.
Yeah.
And like I said, I didn't even know I had them. But yeah, there's all sorts, isn't there? And it's even like colours. I really like launch colours on cars. You know, like when they first release a new model and it's always some really smart, cool colour that you wouldn't necessarily get normally, but because it's such an early one, you're like, oh yeah, maybe I'll have
that. Yeah, you see those marketing guys have sat there, haven't they? And they've launched it in a specific colour because they've all decided that's how it looks at its best.
Well, yes.
But obviously, you know, someone's had a big old meeting, haven't they?
Yeah.
Which colour shall we launch this car in?
Well, you're right, obviously.
Yeah. Because they need to sell cars.
The Range Stormer concept, which was like the three-door, real futuristic-looking buggy thing that's in the British Motor Museum, is in Vesuvius Orange. And then, when they launched the Range Rover Sport, the first edition, you could get it in Vesuvius Orange.
Yeah, that's quite a nice
colour.
That
really vibrant orange colour.
Yeah.
I believe you could either have it in the first edition Sport, either came in black, which loads of people went for black sports, like early sports were mostly black, I would say. Or this really, really like, you got it in the sun and you'd almost have to put sunglasses on. It was such a bright, like deep colour.
Good choice.
I think so. And actually those will probably be collectible in the future, especially supercharged ones. And then obviously down the line, Freelander 2 was launched in a Tambora Flame, which is an orange as well. Not quite as bright as the Sport, but you see a few of them around on like 56 and 07 plates. Do you know the colour I mean?
I'm trying to think. No, I have to be honest.
Okay. It's not, like I say, it's slightly darker maybe than the Vesuvius, but it's still a pretty cool colour. And again, it's one of those where you see one out and about and you think, oh, yeah. Someone went into the dealer and spec'd that new, and they chose to have Tambora Flame, and good on them, I say.
I know the exact colour now. That's, you do see the odd one of those.
For the tape, I'm showing Steve a picture of a Tambora Flame.
Yes, of course. And I've seen that.
Yeah, it's nice because it just stands out in a sea of like white and grey.
Did Steve do that colour in Discovery 4?
No.
3. I'm sure I've seen it on something.
The Discovery, I'm not sure. Discovery 4, I think one of the launch colours was barley blue. That really nice blue and purple.
Yes. First time I ever drove a Discovery 4 was actually in barley blue. We had it on a long-term test, and it was a 2010 car. Lovely, lovely thing.
It suits that shape so well, and I think you could actually get that across Sport and Freelander 2 as well. But then a few years down the line, of course, when Evoque came around, they went a bit launch colour crazy with that as well. And you could have Kalima Lime. I remember seeing the colour sample in the show
at
the dealer where I worked.
Unusual.
And I saw the thing and I went, ugh. But when you see one when you see an Evoque in Kalima Lime, especially a three-door, like the coupe one with the lower roof line,
yeah.
It does work quite well. And again, probably going to be a modern classic, I would wager.
I think so.
You very rarely see Kalima Lima Vokes.
No, I agree with you.
Probably quite a braver choice even than orange.
But some of the new cars, not Land Rover necessarily, but when you pull up behind something, you think, someone's just bought that.
No.
Or leased it, whatever they've done. But what went through their minds? I mean, you know, they've reinvented various shades of brown, haven't they? You know, what is this, the 70s?
I know, you could get Bourbon, couldn't you, on the Discovery?
Yeah.
The Range Rover Sport. I know what you mean, though. It does make you wonder, doesn't it, what sort of a person the first owner was when you see some of the colours, and not even just exterior paint.
Beige.
But yeah, like the interior and paint combinations, you're like, you either go, wow, that looks brilliant, or you go, that's kind of neutral, maybe like silver paint, black interior, a bit boring. Or
yeah.
What on earth were they thinking when they chose those colours? Do you know what I mean?
It's the extension of my personality.
Yeah. I bet the dealer was like, oh God, please don't trade that back in. We will never sell it the second time round. But yeah, it's a funny... I do quite like spotting unusual colours on Land Rovers. It's good fun. The Freelander 2 had some brilliant colours. Martinique Blue and Mauritius Blue, I believe they were called.
How do you even remember these names?
I looked at a lot of job cards when I worked
at
a dealer, and they'd all have the factory. So you got to know them, because if you're looking out into a car park full of Land Rovers and you needed to know which car you needed out, the easiest way was by the colour.
Do you think people are getting much more reserved with colour choice with cars now?
I think
the colour palette offered is a bit limited.
I think manufacturers are bringing back fun colours again. I think Fiat actually did a big marketing thing recently where they said, we're not building grey cars anymore. And they did like a big advert where they dipped, I think it was a Fiat 500, in a big vat of like bright paint and pulled it out again. And it was like, we're just doing fun, like vibrant colours now. We're doing away with the boring stuff.
Is that because you can look at it at the side of the road with its broken down?
Maybe.
Enjoy it.
It's easier to see in the breakdown company's inbound. I don't know about that. But
I mean, I'm not sitting here saying unreliable.
You're kind of throwing throw stones in glass houses here, Steve.
Yeah. Wow. I'm still going to drive home in a Land Rover. Yeah.
I was going to say. But it's like everyone, I remember people going, oh, I want a red Defender when the new Defender first came out. And it took them until they launched the 130 to actually launch a red.
Mm.
And when it did come out, like I've seen a couple on the road in red and you go, yeah, it does suit that shape. So I don't know why they didn't do it from the outset.
I suppose you've got to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose. I don't know. But
you always go and get it wrapped.
A lot of people didn't they?
Yeah,
first came out.
Wrapping cars.
Land Rover actually offered that as an option, didn't they? You could get, when you bought your new Defender, you could choose the paint colour, and then if you were looking to use it off-road or go green laning or whatever, you could have it wrapped in either, I think, probably the same paint colour or maybe a different one. And I believe they knocked that option on the head fairly quickly. I guess it was probably quite a time-consuming thing to do.
Yeah, so, I can imagine. Not a pleasant job.
Well, you've got to either do it in-house and, you know, wrapping a car's not a five-minute job, or you've got to sub it out and that's probably quite expensive. I don't know. But, yeah, it's interesting. But limited editions, something to think about, especially if you're in the market, if you're going to go looking for something, you know, there's might not have to spend that much extra to get something that down the line you really, really cherish.
Yeah. So even if you're in, like, Freelander 2 money, you might as well just buy a limited edition.
They did some really nice. The late ones, the Sport LE limited edition, ex-LRM contributor Frank Elson's got one of them. Very nice in it too.
Okay.
What else? Yeah, like you said, Metropolis. There's a few. There's a few different ones. Do you remember the HST with the really chunky body kit and the spoiler?
Oh, yeah.
Really, really deep bumpers.
On a Sport?
They did a HST Sport.
Yeah.
And I believe full-size Range Rover and Freelander 2. But they were really like, yeah, not aggressive, but like pumped up body style.
I haven't seen one for quite some time, but I do know what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think the kits themselves lasted particularly well because most of them were just held on with 3M tape and a few screws. So by the time you bounced up a few curbs and things like that, it probably loosened off quite quickly. But yeah, again, it's just when you're out and about, you see something interesting that you don't necessarily remember, and then your memory's jogged.
Hmm.
But do you remember on the Freelander 1, the weird sort of side body cladding you could get, like the three bulbous like strips along the side? They were another one that perhaps hasn't aged particularly well. Again, they
bit like one of those Citroen Cactus cars we've seen.
Oh, what with the pads on the side or doors, yeah.
Basically car park to stop trolleys digging in them and stuff.
Well, I believe that's how they launched it, but that's quite a specific area you've got to hit with a trolley to make it, like, not damage anything.
And you've got to drive around with that bolted to the side of your car in the hope that no one puts a trolley into the side. A
load of old mouse mats stuck to the door or something. It's really, really weird. But hey-ho, Citroën aren't exactly known for being conventional, are they? No, so yeah. Fair play to them.
So basically, we've rubbish Citroën now and Fiat in one sitting. So what we're saying is Land Rover is the only car for us.
I think so, yeah. I went with... there was one short period in my motoring career where I was out without a Land Rover. I didn't enjoy it at all, so I had to rush.
Well, you've touched on this in the previous thing. It was a Nissan Bluebird, isn't it?
I had a Sunny for a bit.
Oh, Sunny.
I still had a Land Rover alongside that.
Still junk.
reliable junk. You need to get to and from your job to earn the money to spend on the Land Rover, don't you?
Yes. It's funny, wasn't it? We were walking in this morning from the car park and we were trying to work out, if you're not into cars,
yeah,
or Land Rovers, A, you must be loaded, or B, you're just boring.
What do you talk about if you're not into cars? I don't get it.
So, I mean, I don't like football, although I know a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. People talk about football, but then what? You're not running football, are you? You're not.
No.
You're not ploughing money into football. You just watch it when it's on.
I guess. I don't know.
Plough money into the pub by drinking while watching football?
Or buying tickets to go and see it, maybe.
Yeah, but no.
But that isn't on all the time, is it? Season long.
No.
So what do people... People must literally sleep on mattresses stuffed with money if they're not into Land Rovers or cars in general. There must be more to it that we're not seeing.
Yeah.
Anyway, it sounds like a horrible life and it's not for me.
No, I think we're safe in the knowledge that we're still like Land Rovers.
Poor and happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we actually had a listener's question.
Yeah.
I will get that right.
And about podcast number 555, we'll start saying listeners.
Bill Skinner from the United States of America.
Wow. Worldwide listeners.
Yeah. Actually, the US is our second biggest listener base, which is quite cool.
It's because they're cool people and they like Land Rovers.
They must be. I must say, the American Land Rover scene is something I would love to be involved with. They really, really... Not only do they know how to build the coolest looking Land Rovers, series, Defenders, yes, whatever... some of the places they can go, some of the terrain and like the landscapes they've got open to them, oh, I would kill to get over there and do some proper Land Rovering in the States. That's one of the things on my bucket list.
Utah,
Colorado looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different places that I'd love to go.
Well, it's a massive country and you've got the land isn't so precious, is it? In terms of...
Well, there's more of it.
There's more of it, and you're not... Less impact on one small spot.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. Unlike the Greenlands in the UK, which we've touched on.
Yeah, which are still, you know, important to use, otherwise they will get closed, but also important to take care of, and, you know, anyway.
Which actually leads us straight into Bill's question.
Bill's question is... Love the podcast. One topic I'd be interested in having some advice on is I want to fly to the UK and rent a Defender or similar for 2 or 3 days and head out on some green lanes. Are there companies that will handle this for me? Well, Bill, yes, there are. The first one that springs to mind is Defender Campers. They are down in the southwest and they have four Defenders now that you can hire out. And you can go off on adventures in them. I would give them a call and just sort of explain what you want to do, because some of them would be more suitable for greenlaning than others. But I'm sure they will give you a steer in the right direction and they'll be able to help you out. Really nice people. And they know the area really well. So if you go and hire a Defender from them, they're Defender Campers.
I know of another one.
Go on.
So up in Scotland... they call themselves Goya, so it stands for Get Off Your Ass Adventures. Goya Adventures, managed by a chap called Craig. Craig has taken photographs for the very pages of Land Rover Monthly before, and I think with that they hire it out with roof tents. You can drive around the Highlands of Scotland,
right,
and camp in various places. There are no green lanes in Scotland. It's more private land, isn't it? So yeah, you'd have to seek the landowner's permission, and they would no doubt put you in touch with people where you could check out some trails here and there and possibly come south of Scotland into the Lake District.
Absolutely.
So
and if you're not too fussed about camping, say if you wanted to stay in hotels or whatever, there's Green Lane Tour companies in various places in the UK that would either lend you a vehicle potentially or you know, just make sure you knew what you were doing and guide you, and they, you know, they'll know the areas they specialise in, so to make sure you get the best experience. So search them out as well.
But very, very British thing to do and very, very pleasant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
complete contrast to probably what Bill has exposed to him in
Yeah, I mean,
in the US.
Yeah, you'll certainly be grateful for the amount of space you've got in the US, I'm sure, after doing a British green laning trip, but very enjoyable nonetheless. So I hope that answers your question, Bill. And yeah, if you've got a question that you'd like answered, give us an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk, and we will do our best to answer it for you. So what is the next job for you on your fleet? Because I believe you still haven't progressed with the rolling chassis, Steve.
No, well, we touched on it the other day. I do need to convince my wife that we need to spend some more money.
Okay.
I need a bulkhead.
But the bulkhead that's on yours isn't that bad from memory, is it?
You've seen my welding, haven't you?
Your welding's great now that you've done the trailer.
Yeah, but I've not welded a rusty bulkhead. I just think, I don't know, I kind of want to start with...
The thing, I suppose, yeah, you've got the galvanised chassis already, so it would probably make sense to fit a bulkhead.
Because you'll be chasing. You'll be chasing. You could get that blasted, you could weld it, and you could do a really lovely job, I'm sure.
But you want to fit it and forget it, is what you're saying, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get that.
So I'm in two minds, really. You'd need, I know we spoke just the other day in last week's podcast, we spoke about the mayor launching a stainless steel bulkhead.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, you've got DDS Metal through Richard Chassis, who do e-coated bulkheads and or, you have choice of e-coated and or galvanised bulkheads. So in terms of like two really, really good manufacturers of chassis and bulkheads.
Yes.
I'd have to have a look and decide. Tough choice, actually.
Yeah, well, I completely agree. You don't really hear anyone having any sort of issues with either company.
No, it's definitely not.
I mean, it's really pay your money, take your choice with regards finish. Mm. I know, obviously, Defender bulkheads are e-coated or given a light mist of paint, from the factory, and they do last like 20 years before they start to fail properly. Galvanised extends that even further. But you do galvanize like a little bit more prep heavy before you paint it. Otherwise, you see the
texture. Sort of a texture, and you don't get quite that factory finish.
Yeah,
I actually don't think I would go the galvanized route.
Okay,
because I think with modern, you know, companies like Dinitrol, and you can put cavity wax into your bulkhead, and you know we all know that when Land Rover's produce their cars, they weren't thinking in those lines 20 years down the line.
No.
I think I could get an e-coated or just a stainless bulkhead to outlive me.
Yeah, I mean, stainless definitely would.
No, my track record, I won't keep the car long enough to find out because other Land Rovers come along.
Someone else can benefit from it instead. I completely agree with you. I think if you were doing it as sort of like a rolling project, a rolling restoration, then just repair the one you've got because it's already on the thing. But the fact is, you've got like a bare chassis, you might as well spend the money now and then you don't
have I could buy a bulkhead. Well, this is the thing, right? So what colour? So you get a bulkhead, you now need to paint that said bulkhead before you start fitting things to it.
I really threw a spanner in the works for you the other day, didn't I?
You did.
God's colour.
Please stop sharing calling vintage loveliness with me
I have to say the super duper shiny stuff, I like it. It has limited appeal to me. But when I saw that colour combination, I was like, I had to pick my jaw up off the floor. It looked so good. Like a real dark, I can't remember if they call it amaretto or something like that.
Amaretto, however... Right, so there are more than one shade of amaretto. Amaretto is a flower.
I thought it was a drink.
No, amaretto. Yeah, there is
not a drink.
Yeah, well, I think the amaretto is probably the wrong word then. But
it's not. Yeah, but I was going to say the amaretto drink is not the colour of what we're talking
about.
No,
but there is the paint on the cool and vintage vehicle is of a flower. So that's it's like a mauve is a funny word.
Mauve,
it's a bit
burgundy.
It's not saying the colour by saying mauve or burgundy.
Aubergine.
No, it's lighter than aubergine.
It doesn't do it justice anyway.
What an amazing colour!
Oh my word! And it is not only is it an awesome colour. You must go on Callin Vintage's Instagram and have a look. But paired with fresh galvanised.
Oh.
Cappings and
black canvas.
Yeah, black canvas. And the
and just that kind of solid.
It is to die for. It is so nice.
You see, I don't need that. Oh, that sounds silly, but because I've got my 90 now, that's because I ended up buying that TD590 by accident.
Yeah.
Touched on that before. Because Land Rovers, I can't help it. They find me, yes, as they do you. The urgency to have a Land Rover wasn't there anymore. So I...
Yeah,
Then I started doing bits to the TD5 and then the 300 TDI converted re-chassis job got delayed and...
Yeah, I got you. And then the trailer came along and put it back in further.
And then just generally life in general, you know, running 4x4 events.
So here's a question then. We mentioned NAS 90 earlier. Could you do that dark red, sort of real deep red with fresh gal, but do the rest in like a NAS style? So like big chunky roll bar, soft top. You've got a soft top already, haven't you?
I've got a soft top. I've got normal the sticks, yeah, as it were.
Yeah, yeah. You're halfway there already then. You've got to do it in that colour. But before you mentioned you wanted to do it grey, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I quite like the mid-grey colour. You know the 1960s Series 2 colour?
Yeah, yeah.
Mid-grey.
Yes.
I quite like that. But a lot of people have done Nardo Grey. So Nardo Grey is an Audi colour.
Yes.
And lots of Nardo Grey Orlando's around. In fact, Cool and Vintage have done a Nardo Grey one.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it was going to be that kind of colour. But then I quite like the original colour of that car was... Is it Stratos Blue?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Really, really lovely.
Nothing wrong with that. But I think you need to do it the red colour.
Yeah.
So that I then don't have to do it, you see, because then you've done it.
But then, so there's more reason to do it. So I could then, you'll be drooling over my Land Rover for a change.
Well, yeah, probably. I would be.
If I pay, okay, here's a deal then, as we're recording. If I committed to spraying it that colour, would that encourage you to help me build a car quick?
It might do, actually.
Really?
Yeah. It might do.
That sounds like so I'll trade the colour that I was going to choose for the colour that you would choose because and hope that you help me.
In the long term, it would still save me money because then I wouldn't have to... I would like to do a series. I'd like to do an 88-inch in that colour.
Because they've done one.
They've done a series, yeah. But then if you've done the Defender, I wouldn't need to do that, thus saving me loads and loads of money and more.
I'm liking the way this is going. I can live my favour.
Live vicariously through you.
Whilst helping me.
Yeah. I need to get mine done first.
I think we should shake on it right now.
I'm not shaking on anything. Right. Moving on. Because if you build a Land Rover like that, you need nice interior with it. You need something a little bit classic looking, a little bit stylish, but comfy.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Product of the week. Product of the week, then.
Go on.
County seats from Exmoor Trim. Check them bad boys out. High back. Built-in headrest, really, really nice colour. They're like a sort of biscuit colour, I guess you'd call that.
Caramel. Yeah, caramel. I'd say caramel.
Adjustable lumbar support, just like a Freelander 2, which is obviously the benchmark for luxury. Removable seat base, so you can still get to the battery.
Well, that's important.
Which quite a few aftermarket seats don't have, which...
Like a Cobra bucket seat. Cobras.
Yeah, mine were... Yeah, nightmare.
Yeah.
And they're properly certified and approved by all the people that need to certify and approve seats to be safe for vehicles. Not the cheapest, £1,438, but...
For a pair of seats?
Yeah. They're not awful.
It's not bad.
But they look awesome, and they're heated as well. Heated leather, which is obviously what you need in the UK. So I suggest...
And in a soft top, then.
Yeah, and they would suit that red really nicely. So you should buy them as well.
So now you've spent about...
Well, a good respray is about...
£3,500 of my money buying a bulkhead.
Yeah, before we've even got to the paint.
Before we've got to the paint.
It's not my money, is it? The thing for the Land Rover you'll have at the end, Steve, you've got to keep your eye on the prize here.
It would look amazing. It would
look beautiful.
It would.
So I suggest go to... And they're in the latest issue of... Land Rover Monthly in the new products section, along with tons of other cool stuff that you can buy for your Land Rover and yourself.
Check out the Exmoor Trim website and
Yes.
I defy anyone that doesn't spend money by the end of it.
Exmoortroom.co.uk, all good stuff. Tons of seats. If you don't like these ones, they're bound to have something that you do like.
There are a huge, huge range of seats.
Absolutely.
And all the other goodies as well.
And thoroughly lovely people to boot.
Yeah.
So we've gone from that, and now we're going to talk about feature of the week, which I think we negated to do last podcast. I can't quite remember.
Is it because we make this up as we go along?
No, it's a very, very finely structured podcast.
Yeah.
Anyway, feature of the week is a very, very, very beautiful AA Series 1 in the classic section of Land Rover Monthly. It is a 1953 Series 1 with a hard top. And it's been restored beautifully to AA specification with all the bits in the back, the jerry can, all the recovery gear, ropes, oil cans, things like that. And really, really nice story behind this one. The owner really likes to build Land Rovers that are based on, well, no, actually, he likes to hunt out Land Rovers that die-cast model Land Rovers.
Well, that's interesting. Normally, it's the other way around, isn't it? So die-cast,
yeah. I hadn't thought of it like that, but actually, yeah, this guy, he finds Land Rovers that die-casts have been modelled on.
Okay.
I've got that the wrong way around. The die-cast is a version of the ones he buys. Anyway, he found this one.
If you're confused by that, I agree with you.
Sorry,
so am I.
Articulated that terribly.
Basically, he... No, you confuse me.
Do you know what? Read the feature and you'll understand it for yourself, because Gary Pusey, classics editor, explains it far better than I can with a microphone in front of me.
You should read your own magazine, Martin.
I do read it. I do read it. I just, my brain is short-circulating.
Are you getting hangry again?
It is nearly lunchtime,
yeah,
isn't it?
Definitely.
What day is it today?
Thursday. So only three cakes
today.
Three cakes.
God, I might need more than that. But please, it's a really, really, really fascinating feature. Great read. Fantastic photos with this one as well. A really, really enjoyable, feel-good story and a very, very lovely car. So give that a look. Anything else to report then, Steve?
I'm going on a road trip tomorrow.
Going on your holidays, aren't
you? Going on holiday.
How exciting.
Yes. I'm going to the North Yorkshire coast.
Lovely.
In and around Whitsby.
You can't get enough camping at the moment, can you?
No, in 3 weekends on the trot.
I was going to say.
Camping tray is going with. And,
of course.
And this is going to be, and I mentioned in last week's podcast, time to kind of work out what works, what doesn't work. And I'd like to start taking it to the next level.
Research and development.
Yes.
Very, very.
Yeah, all sort of electrics out. So it's standalone. And... a drawer system in the back made from ply. So I'm going to measure all that up, or probably spend some money, really, to run this order some bits up.
Yeah.
And that will be me.
Happy day. So I'm going to keep you busy. But, well, have a good holiday in the meantime.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this podcast on Wednesday when it was released, Steve will probably be sat somewhere not doing any of that R&D with a portion of fish and chips and a beer, I expect, because I know what he's like. But
I'll be thinking of you there whilst... producing the finest Land Rover magazine in the world.
Well, I'll be grafting away here. So, I need a holiday. I don't know where to go, though. So many options.
With Land Rover or without Land Rover?
With Land Rover.
Do you know what I liked about holidays? No, so, I went to, last November, I went to Cape Verde.
Yes.
And saw some fantastic Land Rovers, working Land Rovers.
Oh, I had my honeymoon at Cape Verde, and yeah, there's a few nice...
Yeah, you probably walked past the very same Land Rover as I did.
Possibly.
205 tyres on it, incidentally. It was an original...
Oh, nice.
...old bus. And I do like finding Land Rovers whilst walking the streets of Spain.
In sunnier climes.
Yeah, yeah, and you just realise, yeah, just cool.
They're getting used all over the shop.
Mm. That's,
again, why they're so great.
So where are you going to go?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it too much yet. It'll be in the UK, I expect. Actually, do you know what? Maybe not the UK. I would love to go to Ireland. I've been meaning to go for years. And
I've never been.
Have you not?
No.
I really, really want to go. My wife and I have been meaning to go, like I say, for a long time, and it just hasn't happened yet. So maybe we'll pack our bags and head off to the Emerald Isle.
So it is a cool place for Land Rovers.
Go on.
The Isle of Man.
Is it really?
So they have green lanes that have weight limits on them so that you can green lane on a motorcycle, but you can't go with a Land Rover. But their local Land Rover club, I believe, now this may have changed, you know, definitely check it out, but they do some green laning. They get special permissions to green lane the Isle of Man. What a fantastic place that is.
I've seen videos of the Isle of Man. It does look very, very pretty and very nice.
Yeah.
And maybe that's another option. Well, that's enough thinking about holidays. We better go do some actual work. Crack on with the next issue of Land Rover Monthly. So leave us a rating for the podcast if you've on your preferred streaming platform, and give us a follow on Facebook, Instagram. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. That would be good as well.
Make it a 5-star rating. We don't want any 3s or 4s.
Oh, no, that's right, actually.
Yeah.
If you could make sure it's like the best. And any feedback on the podcast, anything you'd like us to chat about as well, fire us over an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk, and catch you on the next one.
Yeah, and if you'd like to follow us on our Instagram accounts, you can do so. Mine is Steve_Miller_automotive.
And I'm Land_Rover_Martin. So, I mean, I post on the LRM one a lot more, but you can always see what I'm up to. So.
Exactly.
Cool. All right, then. Well, till next time.
We'll see you soon.